The hour of 11 o'clock having arrived, I will call the House Tax Committee to order. We do have a quorum. Representative Simonson moves the minutes of April 9th. Any additions or corrections to the minutes of April 9th? Hearing none, all fair say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Simonson. Okay, item next, we have a full agenda today. I believe we have the room until about 1:15, so we will start working on these bills. It's my intention to take to have Chair Knobloch move House File 296, and then members, I'd like to probably go to members of the House that are not members of the Tax Committee. And is there anyone on any of the bills on today's agenda that has traveled more than 50 miles to be here, other than the current person here? Okay, so with that, Chair Knobloch moves House File 296. Chair Knobloch moves the A6 amendment. Getting the order here to like. Any discussion on that? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. We now have the bill as amended before us. Chair Knobloch, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. This bill affects bingo halls that are licensed as charitable gambling establishments in the state. I believe that there are seven of them. You can see the revenue estimate is not particularly high. It reduces the tax rate on pull tabs that are sold at bingo halls. And the reason for this is that bingo halls have a great deal more overhead staff and other costs than just your little booth for selling pull tabs in a bar. And with the increases in charitable gambling taxes that came through a few years ago to deal with the Viking Stadium, they're having a hard time making it. In fact, the Bingo Emporium that's in my district in St. Cloud is going to end up, I believe, permanently closed without the relief that this bill or some other sort of charitable gambling bill provides. And so, members, this is a bill that recognizes that bingo halls, by their nature of having a much larger space and many more costs than other charitable gambling, should be treated differently. This bill does that, provides the modest relief needed to keep them in business. I do have Ms. Bonnie Merkling, who's the manager of the Bingo Emporium in St. Cloud, here to take questions if you want. And members, I'd be open for questions.
Okay, ma'am, would you like to make a few comments? And could you please state your name and who you represent for the record, please?
Bonnie Merkling. I represent United Arts of Central Minnesota. They're the organization that conducts bingo and pool tabs at the Bingo Emporium in St.
Could you please spell your last name?
M-E-R-K-L-I-N-G.
Okay, thank you very much. Yeah, if you'd like to make a few comments, then we'll go to member questions.
I think our biggest struggle in space is that we need at least 120 parking spots, and to find space that allows, we don't need 30,000, we don't need 100,000 square feet, we only need about 8,000 to 9,000 square feet, but we need 120 parking spots. So strip malls don't want us, and I've been looking for new space and haven't been fortunate enough to find any. Our landlord gave us a termination because he's going to take over our space. So now I'm looking for space, and I'm competing actually with for-profit businesses who don't pay 36% tax on anything, and they're willing to pay rent that we can't afford to pay. That's an issue. But I think the one thing I've heard, why as a bingo hall aren't you asking for more relief on the bingo side of it? And I can only say to that, bingo is considered a loss leader. You need to have a reason for people to come, and they will buy pull tabs. But at 36% tax, there's nothing left. There isn't anything on the bottom line in a bingo hall. And I know that the ACM bill, they took the compensation part of it out. Without that compensation in the ACM bill, the $100,000, $200,000, $300,000 triggers are way too low. We would not survive. We would hit the 36% in month 8. Can't afford it. There's just no way.
Okay, thank you very much. Thank you. Is there anyone that wishes to testify in the audience on behalf of this bill? Anyone in the audience wish to testify with concerns on the bill? Would the department like to make any comments?
As amended, no.
As amended, no. Okay, thank you. Okay, questions for members, for either the author or the testifier. Chair Earhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Is this part of the $2 billion tax cut that you're, is this a piece of that?
Chair Knobloch.
Representative Earhart. Chair Davids, I don't know. I'll have to see if the committee wants it to be in the bill.
No. Chair Earhart?
No, I just was wondering, because I know that's a big bundle, and we're starting small here.
Thank you. And Chair Knobloch, if Speaker Dowd and Leader Bach cut a deal, would you let the committee know?
Oh, well, I had seen that Representative Thiessen asked Representative Lucero about that, and I've been meaning to try to get a hold of Representative Lucero and find out what's going on.
Thank you, Chair Knobloch. Okay, then. Any further discussion on the bill as amended? Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Knobloch, does this only apply to electronic bingo? Is that correct?
Chair Knobloch?
Mr. Chair, Representative McDonald, no, it includes electronic bingo, but it would apply to regular bingo as well. And I believe there are 7 licensed bingo halls left in the state. There were more at one time. It would basically apply to those 7 halls.
Mr. Chair.
Representative McDonald.
Thank you. So, Representative Knobloch, so this wouldn't be apply to a Legion Club that holds a bingo night. Is that correct?
Chair Knobloch.
Mr. Chair, Representative McDonald, no, I don't believe so because of the definition of bingo hall that they've got in the bill.
Very good. Thank
Representative
you.
Representative McDonald.
Thank you.
Further questions from members? Okay, with that, Chair Knobloch renews his motion to House File 296 as amended related for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. Okay, item next, let's go.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members.
Thank you, Chair Knobloch and Ms. Merkling. Okay, let's go to a non-member of the committee. That would be, let's go to Albright. Okay, we've got, I will move House File 688. And so, Representative Albright, if you could present your bill. I would like to know, is there anyone in the audience who wishes to testify on behalf of this bill other than the folks that are at the front table? Is there anyone who wishes to testify with concerns? Does the department wish to testify on this bill? Where did the department go? I guess if they come back, we will.
We just finished.
No? On this one? Okay, thank you. Okay. Okay, I'll move House File 688. I do not see any amendments to your bill. Representative Albright.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, House File 688 establishes the Minnesota New Markets Tax Credit Program, which closely parallels the successful federal program. New Markets Tax Credits leverage investments in communities that are dealing with lower incomes and higher rates of unemployment. This tax credit program provides investment in businesses that create jobs or retain jobs in Minnesota where they might otherwise go elsewhere. What you will find in House File 688 are the following. Investors can apply the credit against their tax liability for state insurance premium taxes or state corporate business taxes. There are significant portions of the state, both in the metro area as well as in greater Minnesota, that would be eligible to receive investment through this program. The bill provides for an application process through the Department of Economic and Employment and Economic Development. The department would be responsible for evaluating the entities that would receive allocations for the tax credit. There are 4 different community development entities that have been working extensively on the State New Markets Tax Credit Program proposed in House File 688. These are organizations that have had considerable success with the federal New Market Tax Credit Program to bring investments to bear on businesses' opportunities all across the state. House File 688 is similar in many respects to a bill authored by Representative Cresha that your committee heard last week. Representative Cresha and I have been working together to resolve some outstanding differences between the two bills. It is our joint objective to see that these provisions are resolved and that we blend the two proposals into one that would be offered to the committee and to the chair for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill that he is preparing. I have with me Julia Nelmark from the Midwest Minnesota Community Development Corporation in Detroit Lakes, as well as Rick Beeson from the Sunrise Bank. Ms. Nelmark and Mr. Beeson are here and can provide some additional information regarding the New Market Tax Credit Program. Or, Mr. Chair, we can simply respond to questions from the committee members.
Thank you. I think we'll go to questions from committee members, unless you wanted to get a statement on the record. Sometimes you need to do that so you get your per diem and mileage, so you can prove you were here.
I don't need the proof that I was here. Thank you.
Okay. Questions from members? Okay. I guess I'll renew my motion at House File 688 to be later for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. Thank you. for being here to not testify. Okay, so with that, we'll go to item. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members.
Mr. Beeson and Ms. Nellmark. Okay, let's go to who else we have for non-members here. Is Neuberger or Grunhagen? Neuberger? And is Grunhagen here to follow up? Where is he? Oh, there he is. Okay. Okay, item next, I will move House File 1463, members. I do not believe there's any amendments. So I will move House File 1463. Welcome to the committee, sir. Is there anyone that wishes to testify for this bill? Anyone with concerns? The department on this one? Not this time? Okay. Thank you, Mr. Cummings. Okay. So with that, please present your bill to the committee, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. House File 1463 is a bill that allows a ambulance personnel and fire department first responders to deduct their meals. If you work 20 hours a week or less, you'd be able to deduct about $15 a day twice a week. If you work 21 hours a week or more, you'd be able to deduct $15 per day four times a week. There's a great need for this. I was thinking about offering an amendment that would exclude Duluth Fire, but I was talked out of it. Suffice to say, this is basically it. Our EMS personnel and our fire department workers, we are extremely busy, and this would be a real blessing to those that are in this industry.
Thank you, Representative Neuberger. I'm glad I was able to talk you out of excluding Duluth Fire.
Thank you.
So with that, we will, there's no one wish to testify on behalf of the bill or with concerns, questions for members? Questions for members? Okay, I will renew my motion to House File 1463, be later for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. Item next, Representative Grunhagen, if you could join us, please, sir. I will move House File 378. Representative Grunhagen, you have an amendment. Do you wish to offer that?
No, not at this time.
Not at this time. Okay, thank you, sir. Is there anyone who wish to testify on behalf of this bill other than the folks at the table? Is there anybody who wish to testify with concerns? Does the department wish to testify on this one? Not at this time. Okay, so with that, please present your bill, sir.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. What this bill attempts to do is to create a more equalized tax advantage between group insurance and individual health insurance. It allows for the tax deductibility of both health insurance premiums and out-of-pocket medical expenses, along with addressing the long-term care premium. I think it's an area that we'd like to incentivize people to provide for their own health insurance and also long-term care needs. We all know what's facing the state as far as the elderly are concerned. I own a small business and I have the advantage of a health insurance plan. Of course, we're currently right now I'm insured through the state, and we have the advantage of but if I offered it as I previously did through my small group, not only would the premiums be tax deductible as a business expense, my out-of-pocket medical expenses are also tax deductible. And that helps in a huge way alleviate some of the high cost of medical care. To just give you one example where individual premiums have gone, out of several hundred clients on individual health insurance in my agency, I've had two that have actually seen their premiums go down. Everybody else has seen theirs goes up. Substantially. A relative of mine, who I hope still invites me over after seeing their premium increase, was insured with Preferred One at the beginning of the year. They went from $600 and some a month on their individual health insurance to $1,800 a month. That was in 1 year. I moved them to a different company, but they're still paying over $1,200 with a higher deductible. So this the fiscal note is not showing up for some reason. It should be here shortly, but it's still pending as
through that, Representative Grunhagen, we do not have a revenue at this point. I believe as soon as we get it, we'll get it out. We're okay on that because we're not voting on this today. So, members, you will get a revenue note hopefully at today. Yes, okay. Okay, thank you. Representative Grunhagen, to your bill.
And I have John Tyler here to testify in regards to this bill.
Okay, welcome to the committee, sir. Please state your name and who you represent for the record, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is John Tyler, and I'm a principal owner of Boies & Tyler Financial Group. In Eden Prairie based financial planning and employee benefits agency, but we also write a considerable amount of individual insurance as well. And I also, just so you're aware, I also serve as the chair of the Republican Healthcare Task Force that I'm very proud of. Thank you for hearing this very important piece of legislation. I think this is really just a general concept whose time has really come. And thank you, Representative Greenhagen, for this bill as well. It really does address three major areas of affordability for folks. And I think, regretfully, the Affordable Care Act hasn't exactly lived up to its namesake, as Representative Greenhagen mentioned earlier. But presently, just the same, there seems to be a huge emphasis by government in general to encourage individuals to purchase health insurance coverage. It seems to be a major priority. The government, federal government, and state governments have spent hundreds of millions of dollars to set up exchanges and so forth with rather mixed results for a variety of reasons, I think. Right now, though, the main emphasis at this point to encourage people to buy health insurance is to penalize those that choose not to or cannot afford to purchase health insurance, which is even more challenging because of the recent rate increases that have occurred pretty much across the board. The Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act does penalize those who opt out on their tax returns, right now up to about 1% of income. Might we suggest an alternative approach that might be, frankly, more effective? A more positive approach, and something to encourage them rather than penalize them for not carrying coverage, encourage them to carry coverage. And that's really what this bill is all about, a simple line item deduction on the Minnesota tax return, health insurance premiums and long-term care premiums and out-of-pocket expenses as well. This would be a financial incentive delivered in a most positive manner and in a socially acceptable manner. The reason I emphasize that is because not everybody is very comfortable going to a government exchange for what they perceive as a government handout. It hurts their pride. They don't necessarily want to take that approach. It's, I think, unexpected, but because it's there. But it's, I think a tax deduction on a tax return is universally available to all. It's not really perceived as a government handout. The same is equally applicable to long-term care insurance. I think if everyone were able to carry and afford long-term care insurance, would that be wonderful, not only for the Medicaid system, medical assistance system, but also for others as well. Having more people independent of government for the long-term care expenses, it can only help the Medicaid system as well. Additionally, fairness is most important when it comes to the tax code. I mean, where else in life should there be fairness other than the tax code? I mean, really. When it comes to health insurance premiums, though, it's anything but fair. And as Representative Greenhagen mentioned a minute ago, the employer situation is very different than the individual situation. And I think this problem is only going to get larger as time goes on. Tax neutrality between employer-based and individual coverages, I think, is something that to be striven for. Tax parity, I think, is only fair. So tax neutrality and tax parity between individuals and businesses. And tax fairness, I think this is also about tax fairness. And granted, the state deduction isn't necessarily as substantial as a federal deduction, but I think it would chart a course to consumer empowerment, I think, by helping to make premiums more affordable for everybody. So showing strong, equitable leadership to the federal government and other states to follow suit with real reform tax policy would place Minnesota at the lead in real reform among states. Having a well-coordinated state and federal policy with regard to health care expenses and health insurance premiums, I think, would be the ultimate goal. But truly, we're just trying to make individual insurance, health insurance, long-term care insurance, and medical expenses more affordable for people and giving them the government's blessing in a more acceptable manner. I think that would benefit everyone. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Any questions for members? Representative Lincheski and then Carlson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, I was just wondering, maybe it's just my folder, but is there not a revenue estimate on this bill?
As I announced earlier, the revenue estimate isn't out yet. I got a note from Ms. Templin saying it's coming. She'll get it to all members of the committee as soon as it's out.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, I was just handed one.
Oh, well, that's quick. Okay, let's... Wow, Ms. Templin is very efficient here. Let's get that copied and passed out here. Okay, while we're on this bill here. Chair Lincheski.
Mr. Chair, well, maybe Representative Grunhagen can just tell us what the bill costs, since he's got one.
Just tell us here, and we'll get the in writing to you, but if you could tell us what it costs.
The preliminary estimate is $30,300,000 in 2016 and $31,900,000 in 2017.
Thank you.
Chair Lincheski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Chair Carlson.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Representative Green, Greenhagen, question I have, you threw out some numbers at the beginning, and those were dramatic cost increases, but are we comparing the same policy? The Affordable Care Act, as I understand it, requires that you have certain levels of coverage, and I just want to make sure that the numbers you shared were comparing apples to apples.
Representative Grunhagen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thanks for that question, Mr. Representative Carlson. Yeah, my brother-in-law retired from his job where they had health insurance. My sister works at a dental office where they don't provide group health insurance. So when he retired, they were faced with the COBRA premiums, which were extremely high, versus taking out an individual policy. At that particular time, the most competitive individual premium on the market was Preferred One. And they had a $1,000 deductible. I sold it to them, so I should know. $1,000 deductible.
Representative Grunhagen, have they approved you giving their confidential information out to the world?
I didn't use their names.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
And you just say someone you know.
Yeah.
Okay.
That I could be related to.
I don't need to know who the people are. I just want to know. My basic question is, was the coverage under the new plan that they ultimately bought that you said that you found for your clients, you said there were two numbers.
Yeah, the
Chair Carlson, numbers kicked around, and so, Mr. Chairman, I'm just trying
to find
out.
Chair Carlson, I have found under the Affordable Care Act, people are getting less for more. The premiums have gone up substantially, and where they had a $2,000 deductible, now they have a $10,400 deductible. Where they had out of pockets limited at $3,000 or $4,000, now it's $10,400. So in my area, especially because of the Mayo effect, my premiums are 2 to 3 times as much as they are in your district. And so in various parts of the state, they're going from $1,000 or $2,000 deductibles to $10,400. The co-pays can be higher, so as a rule, yes, they're meeting the standard benefits of the ACA, but they're getting less coverage for more money. That's what I found. Representative Grunhagen?
I've heard you comment about your area in Mayo before, but my question was really of Representative Grunhagen, yep, and comparing the numbers that he shared in his testimony with the committee. He told us what did it originally cost his clients. Then he had apparently two bids or two different plans. One very expensive and then one that was quite a bit less but still more than the original one.
Yeah.
And I just want to know if we're comparing the same coverage when we talk about those costs.
Right. Yeah.
President,
and I don't mean that as a negative question. I'm just trying to solicit information.
No, that's, yeah. President Grunhagen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Carlson. Yeah, as I was explaining, they had a $1,000 deductible. Their premium with the company they were at, and it was the essential health care benefits. So it was under the ACA requirement, and their premium went to $1,800 a month at the $1,000 level. I switched them to a different company with the essential health care benefits. Their deductible went to $3,000 out of pocket, and their premium went to $1,200 a month. Okay? So in terms of the benefits, the benefit structure was the same. They had to take a higher deductible, and they still wound up with twice the premium that they had previously prior to the rate increase.
Chair Carlson.
Oh, Mr. Chairman, I was just trying to get a handle on if it was the same coverage. And I think Representative Greenhagen may have said that, but I'm still not sure, but I'll stop there.
Well, Mr. Chair, just clarification. Yeah, all policies had the essential health care benefits. So in terms of benefit structure, they would have all been the same, whether it was the original policy you had, the renewal policy, or the policy I switched it to.
Chair Carlson.
That's fine.
Representative Ansells, Loeffler, and Earhart. Representative Ansells.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Grunhagen, I'm rather shocked at your conversion to the world of socialized medicine here. I'm flabbergasted. Actually, Could you talk to us a little bit about how you envision this to be implemented and enforced and accounted for? Who would manage this, and how would this be done?
Representative Grunhagen.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. Thanks for the question. Yeah, I mean, it'd be like anything else. Like right now, on a small group basis, you would take your premiums that you paid and your out-of-pocket medical expenses, take them to your tax accountant, add them up, and they would be entered on the tax form as a tax deduction to your taxable income. So you would, depending on what tax bracket you were in, you could save, you know, 6 to 9% on your out-of-pocket and health insurance premiums.
Representative Ansel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Representative, it would be just like the standard process of filling out your income taxes, and would be just like any other deduction.
Yep. Representative Grunhagen.
Mr. Chair, Representative Anzlik, yes, it would be like any other deduction.
Representative
I'm good.
Representative Loeffler, then Earhart. Representative Loeffler.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Earhart. Mr. Tyler, it doesn't feel like it's as fair as you're describing it. First of all, a lot of people don't do deductions. They take the standard deduction, so you've right away taken out a good share. But can you tell me how you really feel like this is going to address the issue between employer and individual coverage, because employers get the advantage of group rates still, even under the Affordable Care Act, even though you can't discriminate against pre-existing conditions, the age rating, other things do tend to work against the individual, so you're actually incenting problems for a lot of the people I think you're saying you're going to help.
Mr. Tyler.
Mr. Chair, Representative Loeffler, thank you for the question. I think the what I'm referring to there is just the fact that if an employer pays a premium on behalf of themselves or their employees, they are able to take a line item tax deduction for that. The same is being proposed here for an individual who perhaps maybe isn't offered group insurance coverage, is maybe self-employed perhaps, doesn't have any employees, and what have you, being offered the same opportunity. Pretty straightforward. And so I think that right now they do not have that opportunity. Everything they pay for their premiums is in a way double penalized. First of all, they're paying oftentimes a rather high premium, and having to pay for it with after-tax dollars, which of course is the most expensive dollar that one can pay for anything with. And so we're simply trying to suggest that in the basis of common sense and parity, that the individual be offered that it applies to the same privilege as an employer has.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and Mr. Tyler. This actually goes far beyond that. And while Representative McDonald and I and Representative Grunhagen sit on the Health and Human Services Committee, I suspect none of us could pass a test on what is MA-covered benefits, and yet that's the basis for this bill. What's deductible is whether or not it is covered under MA as a benefit set, which, of course, we know is tailored particularly for the people with severe disabilities that we serve a lot. It has a lot of different provisions than you would see in a standard high deductible policy. And is your intent that that become now the model of care that we should encourage insurance to cover?
Representative Grunhagen?
The actual premiums itself in terms of coverage by the insurance company would be covered by the essential benefit set, okay? But the out-of-pocket medical cost, if that provision goes forward, would be subject to the medical assistance coverage. So your out-of-pocket medical cost is where you would be, where the medical assistance coverage would actually apply. And keep in mind, people with individual policies also have disabled children, have higher medical expenses, and some of their expenses aren't covered. This would still, for their disabled child, and this would still allow at least some relief to those individuals for the care of their children.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't think, I think the practical effect of this might make tax filing really difficult for a lot of people, and a lot of tax accountants would have to learn a lot more than they perhaps know now about public programs.
Thank you, Representative Loeffler. Chair Earhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. the first company that you mentioned that you had this person insured with, what was the name of that?
Well, that was
Grunhagen.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Third One.
Third One.
Yes. Mr. Chairman, isn't that the company, when you were talking about how far your premiums went up, isn't that the company that lowballed the whole situation and ended up almost going bankrupt, but they had to pull out of the whole scheme of things, and so you got such a great deal to begin with, so of course there's going to be quite an increase in premiums.
Representative Grunhagen.
Mr. Chair, yeah, they decided to pull out of Minsure. They offered policies inside and outside of Minsure, and they did have some difficulty with their rates and the amount of claims. So yeah, their premium did jump dramatically, which is one of the reasons I switched my clients to a different company. But I still had to increase their deductible, and their premium still doubled with the other company.
Chair Earhart.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I'm suggesting that because of the way that company was assessing its risks, it really wasn't doing a good job for you in the beginning. and you are now paying more appropriate premiums for the risk. And so whatever they did to screw things up was too bad, but it happens.
Okay. Any other questions, members? If not, I will renew my motion to House File 378 be later for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. Thank you, Mr. Tyler, and thank you, Representative Grunhagen. Item next. I was going to go McDonald, but I think yours is kind of has to do with some of the stuff in House File 837. So I think we'll kind of do those together because I think the department where we left it off was going to come in and make a few comments on both of those. So maybe we can get those both at the same time. Okay, item next. I'll move House File 2153. And House File 2053 is a fine piece of legislation. It's Section 179 expensing carryover. What we found out, members, is that when you do a Section 179 expense, let's say you have the deduction and then you have a year where you've lost money, apparently under current law we can't carry that forward. Maybe Mr. Michael could just make a few comments on the bill.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I think as most of you know, Section 179 allows qualifying small businesses to essentially expense their certain capital expenditures in the year in which those capital expenditures are made rather than taking cost recovery deductions over a period of years. Minnesota for nearly a decade now has not conformed to the higher federal allowances but requires taxpayers to add back 80% and then deduct that 80% in the next five tax years. The allowance of those deductions in the next five tax years are not essentially, they have to be claimed in that tax year only. And the situation that occurs, and this I think is very typical for farm taxpayers who were who made Section 179, took 179 deductions in years when crop prices are high, that now in year two or three when crop prices are low, they don't have enough taxable income to actually take that 80% that's spread over 5 years, and so unless you allow them to carry it forward, they never will be able to claim that allowance. And so what this does is it says if that occurs in that year in which they're the one-fifth of the 80% that they carried forward to the next 5 years, if they can't use that because their taxable income is not high enough, then they're allowed to carry that forward for 10 years.
So thank you, Mr. Michael. Members, this is not full conformity with Section 179. This is being able to carry forward the item or the issue that you have there as far as being able to carry forward the deduction. Okay, so with that, is there anyone who wishes to testify on behalf of this bill? Nobody likes my bill? Anyone with concerns? Would the department like to testify on the bill? Not at this time. Okay, questions for members? to me, I guess.
Mr. Chairman.
Chair Earhart.
When the department says they don't want to testify at this time, at what time are we expecting they will testify?
Chair Earhart, the department can testify any time they want to. Any other questions? With that, I will move that House File 2153 be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. Item next, House File 2186. Seeing no amendments, I'll move House File 2186. Is there anyone that wishes to testify on behalf of 2186? Anyone that has concerns that would like to testify? Anyone from the department want to make any comments on this one? Ms. Manzi, what am I doing?
Mr. Chair, under present law, there's a component of the dependent care credit in which married couples filing jointly who have a child under the age of one are deemed to have the maximum of allowable expenses for purposes of claiming the state dependent care credit. So in effect, it allows a parent to stay at home and care for the child, and then they are granted the credit as though they had paid the maximum amount that would qualify for the credit. Your bill, House File 2186, extends that to three more years of age for the children, so it would be for children up in under age four. They would be able to have the deemed expenses up to the maximum allowable. If they had two or more children under age four, they would have deemed expenses equal to the maximum allowable for two or more children. If they had just one, they would have deemed expenses up to the maximum for one. So the maximum credit that someone would get for one child from ages 1 through 3 would be $720, and for two or more children ages 1 through 3 would be $1,440. And it's a refundable income tax credit.
Thank you. And members, on this bill, it will be my intention that this somehow gets merged in somehow with some portion of the governor's child care credit bill. This is a little different approach. But that's, I've been very supportive of what the governor's trying to do there, maybe not to that level. So, with that, any questions on House File 2186? Hearing or seeing none, I will lay it over for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. Item next, income sourcing rules, House File 2179. I don't believe that's another David's bill. There's no amendments at this point. So I'll move House File 2179. I believe there are some folks who would like to testify on behalf of this bill. Beth Cadoon, Dale Lucifer, Walter Pickert. If you could all come down. And I think, Ms. Cadoon, these folks like my bill?
Right.
Okay. Is there anyone that doesn't like my bill or would like to testify with concerns? Because you're certainly welcome to do that. We will put a time limit on you, however. With that being said, does the department wish to talk about this one? Okay, the department does wish to talk about this one. So we will go to some very brief testimony, and then we'll go to the department, then we'll go to members' questions. Okay, Ms. Cadoon, please state your name and who you represent for the record, please, and thank you very much for being here.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Beth Cadoon. I represent the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. I want to thank Chair Davids for bringing this bill forward. This bill would eliminate confusion on Minnesota tax laws, as it would treat all non-resident board of members the same, regardless of the number of boards that they serve on. Under current revenue notice, if a non-resident board member is on two or fewer boards, they use the time spent method. So what this bill, it would codify that current revenue notice. But then it would also extend that if you're on more than two boards, it would also use the time spent method. And like I said, that will eliminate confusion, and we think treat all board members the same, which is a more equitable treatment. With that, I'll turn it over to Dale Busacker and Walter Pickhart that can explain this a little further. Thank you.
Welcome to the committee, sir. Please state your name and who you represent for the record, please.
My name is Dale Busacker, B-U-S-A-C-K-E-R.
Welcome to the committee, sir.
Thank you. I'm employed by Grant Thornton, but today I'm not testifying on behalf of my firm, nor am I testifying on behalf of any particular client. I do support House File 2179. Board members are not employees. They are in a business. And as a result, they apportion their income to Minnesota based on the sales-only factor. and that's why that provision is being amended. I support using the time spent method. It's fair, it's clear, people understand it, and it's administrable. The department allows the time spent method to be if you serve on one or two boards, and this bill simply codifies that and says that it applies to all board members, no matter how many boards that they serve on, and without the need to petition or to request a special relief from the department. That this would then be the policy going forward, so it would provide taxpayers with certainty. That's what I have to testify on.
Thank you very much, sir. Please state your name and who represents the record.
Walter Pickard. I'm a partner at Fagery Baker Daniels, the law firm in Minneapolis. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I have represented over the past 3 years a number of Minnesota public companies and a number of directors in connection with income tax apportionment issues, and so I have some familiarity with this subject matter. The proposed legislation would apportion a director's income to Minnesota based on where the director did the work. This is a common sense rule, and that's why I support it. Basically, this rule would treat directors just like every other employee of a corporation. Directors technically are not employees. They get 1099s, employees get W-2s. And it's because of this distinction that the problem has arisen over the past 3 years. If you get a W-2, the 2917 is very clear. You're an employee, you apportion your income based upon where did you do the work. For directors, it's not clear. They get a 1099. The rule is under 190.191, subdivision 5J. The rule technically is where were the services received. Nobody really knows what that means in the context of a director. It might mean, you know, the company received them wherever it does business. It might mean the company received them where the shareholders are because the shareholders elect their directors. What the department says is the department that the services are received solely at the corporate headquarters, and that's where the problem has come up. Last year, to mitigate the problem, the department came out with a revenue notice which basically says directors can use where they did the work. So if you did the work in Minnesota, it's apportioned here. If you did the work somewhere else, it's apportioned somewhere else. That's a common sense rule. The problem is the department limited it to situations where the director only held two board seats. If the director holds a third board seat, then a different rule applies. And there's another problem there. The department has, although the revenue notice tells you what the alternative rule is, there's nothing in written guidance. There's nothing out there that tells you what the regular rule is. Yeah. Department has never told taxpayers what the regular rule is. I have talked to the department over the past 3 years on numerous occasions, and I understand what their position is. And the position has a number of problems, but the main problem with their position is meetings by teleconference. So what they say is that a meeting by a teleconference is sourced to the Minnesota headquarters company. Even if you were on the phone down in Iowa, you never set foot in Minnesota. They say that's a Minnesota service because the headquarters is here. Furthermore, they say even if you never set foot in Minnesota during the entire year, if all you had were teleconference meetings, 100% of your income would be sourced to Minnesota. That is not a fair result, and it's not something I can explain to a director as being logical. It isn't logical. And it's important that, to me, it's important that the state law be clarified so that we know that where you did the work is where you're going to be taxed. And that's what this bill does, and that's why I support it.
Mr. Pickard, you haven't come up for the tax committee to look for logic, have you?
Pardon?
You haven't come to the tax committee to look for logic.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah. Okay. We have anybody else like to testify on this bill? Any questions? It's my intention, members, we'll get questions from members to the witnesses, then we're going to bring the department up, and then we'll kind of go through the same thing. Any questions for the witnesses? Okay, thank you very much, gentlemen, for your testimony. And Ms. Cadoon, Mr. Cummings, please. To House File 2179. Welcome to the committee. Sir, please state your name and who you represent for the record, please.
Oh. Good morning, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Paul Cummings, and I'm the Tax Policy Manager at the Minnesota Department of Revenue.
Welcome to the committee, sir.
Thank you for the opportunity to be a resource on this bill. This bill modifies the sales factor under the apportionment formula to provide a special rule for compensation received by members of board of directors who are not Minnesota residents. This rule provides that these payments made to a non-resident board member of a board of directors of a corporation are sourced to Minnesota based on the proportion of time the board member spends in Minnesota providing board service. Minnesota Statutes 290.191 Subdivision 5J outlines how any taxpayer who is a non-resident must apportion their income to Minnesota. This includes sole proprietors who live in another state but work in Minnesota, as well as large corporations who earn income inside and outside of Minnesota. Under the statute, the method is presumed to be fair. The right to petition the commissioner provided in 290.20 is the remedy for any taxpayer who does not believe that the statutory method of determining Minnesota apportionment is fair under the circumstances. When proposing an alternative method, they would have to demonstrate how it is more fair and ensures that benefits to a professional board members does not appear to be more or less fair to taxpayers as a whole. Mr. Chair, to provide additional guidance for situations a taxpayer is serving on two or fewer boards, the Department of Revenue issued a revenue notice. We issued this notice based on a request to allow an alternative apportionment method for board members. Those who sought change argued that because board members whose service is limited to two or fewer boards functions like employees of a corporation, it would be fair to attribute their income to Minnesota like non-resident employees. Therefore, the revenue notice allowed anyone who meets the criteria to use the alternative method of apportionment. Mr. Chair, we do acknowledge that this is a narrow population. However, if a board member serves on three or more boards, the taxpayer's board activities are less like those of an employee and more akin to being in the business of serving on boards. In those instances where someone is in the business and is less like an employee, they are subject to the same tax laws as all non-resident entities who generate income in Minnesota. They would do so as provided in existing statute. Finally, it's important to note that non-resident board members can receive a credit for tax paid to Minnesota on the return they file in their state of residence. The proposed language would move the taxation of non-resident board members farther away from other residents and non-residents generating income in Minnesota. We think the current revenue notice appropriately addresses this issue. Thank you, Mr. Chair, for the opportunity to be a resource. Ms. Steenblok is here. If there's any questions, and we look forward to answering if anyone has any.
Thank you. Questions for members to Mr. Cummings or to Ms. Steenblok?
Could you comment on the telecommunications?
Okay, with that, I will move the House File 2179 to the leader of possible inclusion. The amount was taxable. Thank you, Mr. Cummings. Okay, we've got two issues left, and before we get into them, I'd just like to announce for tomorrow's meeting there's one bill on the agenda, and that's the jobs bill. So we'll look forward to seeing that fine piece of legislation. And then I'm so excited, though, about Thursday. We have a Slocum bill up, I think, on Thursday. In that regards, what was it again?
Zappers.
Zappers. I mean, what other committee would have a bill about zappers? No, seriously, it's a very good bill. I like the bill. I don't know why I'm talking about Thursday's agenda. Okay. With that, let's go to Mr. Representative McDonald, if you would, please. And members, kind of where we're at is we've got Representative McDonald's bill, We had, I think, on the agenda last time, and we didn't quite get to it. And then we heard House File E37, and we weren't able to give the department enough time to make their comments, so we want to come back and do that for the department. So very briefly, Representative McDonald moves House File 1393. There are no amendments. Could you tell us what your bill does, and then we'll do a little rehash of my bill, and then we will keep, we have 1393 before us. What's the department's preference? Do you want to testify on this bill also, or what if we, after we hear from and go through questions, if we lay it over and then go to mine, and you can make comments on both? Is that okay?
All of our testimony is combined, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Let's do that. Okay. Representative McDonald, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Committee members, this bill was discussed on April 9th last week. I was unavailable to make it. It basically changes the definition. It modifies the definition of a resident for income tax purposes. I understand there may be some questions regarding this bill, so I stand for questions. Currently, right now, the state law allows a resident to be out of the state for 183 days. This bill proposal extends it to 200 days and allows folks who are outside either living at another residence or vacationing or traveling or on business the capability of being gone for a little bit longer. It's also known as the snowbird, if you will, bill, if you've heard that term before. It was given to me by a commissioner from our township in my community who says that our state laws chase people out of our state, especially the snowbirds who leave the cold weather. Many of them leave due to health reasons, and as they get older, the aging process, the arthritis, which I think I'm experiencing in my knees. So some of them like to leave in October before it gets too cold. So this bill would allow them to be gone from October through April 15th, tomorrow. Close enough for government workers. It actually extends it. That would be 197 days. This bill goes to 200 days. But this would allow folks to be gone out of this cold state from October through tax day. Any questions? I'm happy to answer.
Okay,
Mr. Gruffalo, any questions?
Thank you.
Yeah, you're
Is there anyone in the audience wish to testify on behalf of this bill? Anyone wish to testify with concerns? We'll take the department after the next bill, if that's okay. I believe we held this one over. I think Chair Earhart had a question on this bill. So, Chair Earhart?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I was just wondering what the extra, how many other days that you're allowing here does for anybody. I mean, you could make it 2 weeks longer, 1 week longer, enough so that if their plane breaks down, they can stay and, you know, all that stuff. But what is, we're adding how many days now with your bill to the current law?
Representative McDonald?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Earhart, 17 days approximately. And current law right now does allow for plane travel for if your plane is delayed and you're switching, transferring from one plane to the other and there's a delay or a breakdown. Current law also allows for that currently right now.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I just don't know why we are settling with that. I mean, let's do something significant. 17 days, I'd make it 18.
Representative McDonald?
I mean, what kind of nonsense is this? What are we doing here?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Are you? Is that an oral amendment, Representative Earhart?
I hope not.
300 days.
What? 300
days.
Chair
Earhart. 300 days. Oh, 300 days. I go for 300. No, thank you. I just, I don't know why we're dinking around with this, is what I'm saying, or putzing around, or whatever you want to call it. Why don't we just leave it alone?
Okay, Mr. Chair.
Representative McDonald.
Representative Earhart, you said dinking around, messing around, and monkey business, or something like that.
Yeah.
My constituents would be offended by that. I'm not messing around, and I won't even repeat the D word already. I already said it. This isn't for fun. You got a little of my Irish up. Folks in my district asked me to do this because we have a propensity to chase people out of our state because of our tax laws, and that's why I brought it forward. It's not monkey business. It's a serious business. I'm not down here to be dinking around, and I offended by that language. And well, my mom is too, because I just repeated you twice.
Chair Earhart.
Mr. Chairman, I think the problem is that you're satisfying one person in your district. I could come in here with a whole list of people that would like it all the way from 17 days, 18 days, 20 days, 50 days. We're very comfortable now. They know that it's 6 months plus 1 day now, I think. Is that the rule? But why don't we just leave it alone and let the other people stay here an extra 17 days or wherever they want to stay? I mean, how far can you tweak this stuff is my point.
Representative McDonald.
Well, thank you. Well, Representative Earhart, we certainly don't want to get greedy with too many days. 300 days would be too much, I would think. We wanted to, my intent is to extend this to a very fair and reasonable allowance for people to be gone during the cold months and still be a resident here in Minnesota.
Well, I think fair and reasonable is in the eye of the beholder, and I've got a coin here we can flip two of them if you want to pick out a different date. And whatever comes down, if you get heads, I'll let you tell you it's 17. If it's tails, I'll get to pick a date. That's the point here. The point is you can't arbitrarily. You got a solid date now. Everybody knows it. And to pick an extra 17 days, how many people do we help, and whatever, this is ridiculous.
Chair,
how far are you going to chase this around?
Chair Hurd, I'll put you down as a maybe on this. Okay.
Okay.
Chair Draskowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just curious. Representative McDonald, you were saying that they could have, we could expand it to give them freedom until tax day. And I was thinking of tax freedom day. And, you might want to consider amending your bill and considering since tax freedom day continues to get to be later and later and later in Minnesota as our government grows bigger and bigger and bigger and taking more and more money from people, our freedom is diminished and we have to wait longer and longer and longer in the year in order to obtain that freedom. So just an idea on the amendment as you work this bill through, but thanks for bringing the bill.
Thank you, Chair Draskowski. Representative Moline.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative McDonald, do you know if this, does this impact at all people's ability to vote in Minnesota? I'm just thinking of residency requirements. How this, does this impact that at all?
Representative McDonald?
I believe that it would not.
Representative Moline?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative McDonald, do you know if people are not a resident for the purpose of the income taxes, are they allowed to vote in Minnesota? I mean, right now it's 183 days, so say that they're not a resident under current law, are they allowed to vote in Minnesota?
Representative McDonald?
Mr. Chair, Representative Moline, perhaps that I would ask Mr. Michael or one of the staff if they could answer that question.
Mr. Michael, the question of how this might affect voting.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Moline, the two are not explicitly linked. Keep in mind there are two tests that determine, two independent tests that can determine whether or not you're going to be taxed as a Minnesota resident for individual income tax purposes. There's what's called the domicile test, which is an old common law test that says you are a resident if you intend Minnesota to be your permanent home. And that's independent of how much time you actually are physically present in Minnesota. There's a separate statutory residency or physical presence test that Representative McDonald's bill is amending. What current law says is if you're in Minnesota physically for more than half of the days in the year, then you're going to be deemed a resident, even though you may, under the domicile test, regard some other state as your domicile or your permanent home. In general, voting, registering to vote, is one of the things that the department looks at as a evidence of your intent to make a state your permanent home. So if you're registered to vote in Minnesota, the department would consider that to be some evidence of the fact that you regard Minnesota as your real permanent home because of your civic commitment or something like that. Now, it's certainly possible that you could still be voting in Minnesota but claim, no, I'm not a Minnesota domiciliary. I think that would be very unlikely. So if you register to vote, you're likely to, you know, flunk the domicile test if you're trying to claim you're a resident elsewhere. And so most people who are claiming they're not Minnesota residents are not going to be registered in Minnesota to vote. But there's not, you know, it's not a slam dunk absolute thing. So complicated answer to a seemingly simple question.
Representative Moline.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I'm just a little confused because it seems like the last bill, the chairman's bill, and this bill kind of providing tax breaks and tax incentives to people who aren't even Minnesotans, and I guess I'm kind of trying to figure out why that would be a priority of the Republican majority. I thought we were going to be giving tax credits and incentives to Minnesotans, so I'm just a little confused by this bill and the previous one, so I just wanted clarity on how the voting laws worked with the proposal in front of us. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Moline. Any other, Representative Lancheski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess just a question for maybe Mr. Michael, and that is actually reading the bill on the language 1.14. Is this drafted the way we've all been just been talking about this? I mean, because it doesn't say, it's not about 200 people staying in Florida, or 200 days stay in Florida, it's 200 days in Minnesota. That's how it's drafted. This is kind of confusing here. Can you clarify?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Lancheski, yes, the effect of Representative McDonald's bill in a normal non-leap year, it would allow an individual who's not a Minnesota domiciled person, so they don't qualify as a resident under the intent test, but they are concerned about the physical presence test, that it would allow them to be in Minnesota 17 more days than they otherwise would have been allowed to. So instead of being able to be in Minnesota for 182 days, they could be here for 200 days and still not be a resident.
Chair Lancheski.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. So, you know, as I understand it, then it's helping people not be Minnesotans, expanding their ability to not be Minnesotans so they don't have to pay Minnesota taxes, and I think that's what Representative Moline is saying. It's just helping people not pay Minnesota taxes and be non-Minnesotans. But the testimony, when we were talking initially, it sounded like we're helping people stay in Florida longer, and it's actually the converse. You're helping people stay in Minnesota longer, but say they're not a Minnesotan and not pay Minnesota taxes. Is that accurate? I guess, Mr. Michael, if I'm now understanding it correctly.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Lancheski, yes, the time limit in the bill relates to physical present, days present in Minnesota, not days present outside Minnesota. I guess they're reciprocal.
Okay, Mr. Chair.
Chair Lancheski.
Well, then just for clarification, so I because when I was thinking about the snowbirds and the October to April discussion, I think the committee was thinking that we were allowing people to be in the warm weather or whatever longer, but that's actually not accurate. It's allowing to be in Minnesota longer. Still saying you're not a Minnesotan, even though you're here and you're using our services, and then you don't have to pay Minnesota taxes. So just trying to clarify how it plays out.
Thank you, Chair Lancheski. And to Representative Lee's comments about the last couple bills, I won't speak to the McDonald bill. He does a very good job with that. But my bill, House File 2179, is about bringing logic to the tax code, just to clear that up. Okay, with that, any other questions for members? If not, I will, or Representative McDonald will renew his motion, House File 1393 be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. Item next, I'll move House File 839. Members, we've already heard this bill. I'm sorry, I'll move House File 837. Did we amend that last time? Okay, as is. Okay. I'll move House File 837. Members, we've already had the testimony on this. I believe we just want to wrap it up and give the department the time they need to make some comments on 837, and we'll also, of course, allow comments on the McDonald bill we just heard, House File 1393, although technically it's not before us, but we'll certainly give them that latitude. So, and again, members, tomorrow's meeting is at noon. It's at noon in room 200. Room 200. Oh, What room?
Room 10.
Tomorrow noon at room 10. Look at your emails. It should be out there for everybody. I'm just excited about Thursday. Yes, Chair Lencheski.
Just a question. And I guess Representative Chair Drazkowski is here. What is your intent if the property tax committee is still meeting at that time? Will taxes still meet at noon? Because my understanding, and maybe Chair Drazkowski can tell us, you know, what I thought I saw in an email is that we're going to take up the division and take public testimony and do amendments. So, I mean, that sounds like a lot of hours. So I'm just wondering if you would convene us in this room while we're simultaneously working in the other room.
Chair Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Chair Lencheski. Yes, the plan for tomorrow for division is to meet in the morning at 8:15 until 10, and then to recess until, I'm pulling up on my calendar here, 12:45 in the basement, and then to go as long as we need to in order to finish up. So that's the plan
for
division.
Chair Lencheski, is it 2:30 you reconvene?
I may have the wrong time on my calendar.
Mr. Chair,
2:30 maybe, Chair Lencheski.
Well, Mr. Chair and Chair Drazkowski, I think we all know that Mr. Ruvis probably is the one who's really coordinating all this, so maybe he can tell us. I mean, I think what I'm just asking is, you know, we won't be offering minority amendments in your committee and trying to work on that while we're also being asked to be in the full committee. That they wouldn't meet at the same time.
Chair Lencheski, it's not my intention to have
okay.
overlapping committees, so I think if we start at noon, we have the room till 2:15. Only till 1? Wow. Okay.
Okay.
So then if they start at 2:30, we'll be long done.
So Mr. Chair, I think we all know as members on both sides of the aisle that we're often asked to be in multiple places at once, and committees do overlap. But in markup days, I think, I can't speak for my colleagues, but I would guess every minority member on the property tax committee would want to be in the room while the bill's marked up.
I agree 100%.
Thank you.
When you see the full omnibus tax bill, you probably won't need any time for amendments.
No, probably
not. Should be good. We had a little time issue, so we should be done with taxes tomorrow so you can have full time to mark up the division report. Okay. Mr. Cummings, welcome to the committee. Please state your name and who you represent for the record, and we'll wrap up with the department's comments on 837. If you want to say anything about 1393, that'd be cool, too.
Thank you for welcoming me back, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Paul Cummings, and I'm the Tax Policy Manager at the Minnesota Department of Revenue. As Ms. Steenblok mentioned, based on discussions during the 2014 legislative session, the department initiated a review of the residency law, both statute and the rule, and the department's application of them. We conducted listening sessions between May and December of 2014. We held six listening sessions with over 100 participants to hear what tax, banking, insurance, and financial professionals think about Minnesota's residency law as they relate to individual income taxes. As a result of the valuable information we learned, the department is making several changes to our process for addressing domicile and residency. We will revise our contact letters, requests for information, questionnaire, and audit reports. We'll modify our procedures and provide additional training to our employees to ensure we have a common standard approach to requesting and reviewing information for residency audits. We will provide taxpayers and representatives with helpful tips for handling a residency audit, and we're updating all website content and centralizing it into a one-stop shop for residency information. As we stated, we will also issue a revenue notice based on current law and rule that currently states that the mere physical location of a CPA or attorney providing services is not a factor in determining residency, and that the department will not look at the location of bank accounts when determining residency. Finally, we will update our existing fact sheet and other materials to include a modernized explanation of how we use certain factors to determine residency. Mr. Chair, we believe that identifying the appropriate residency status of taxpayers is important for the integrity and administration of our state tax system. The changes outlined above will help ensure consistent, transparent, and fair treatment of all taxpayers, make it easier for taxpayers to understand how residency is determined for taxes, and reduce the time and effort needed for taxpayers who are selected for a residency audit. Mr. Chair, I also wanted to provide some brief comments on some of the bills that were heard a few days ago and then also today. Mr. Chair, Representative Hertas's bill modifies the definition of resident by creating an exception to domicile that allows a taxpayer to file an affidavit with the commissioner before the end of a tax year to declare that they are domiciled elsewhere, and that is binding on the Commissioner of Revenue and the courts. His bill requires a taxpayer to be present in the state for substantially all of a calendar day, including an overnight stay, for a day to be considered a Minnesota date for day count purposes, and accepts any day spent in Minnesota from day count when the primary purpose of the day is for medical treatment. Medical treatment is defined as for the diagnosis, cure, mitigation, treatment, or prevention of disease for the purpose of affecting any structure or function of the body. Similarly, Mr. Chair, Representative Dean Bill excludes from the day count days that are primarily spent receiving medical treatment. Verifying the days spent in the state primarily for medical treatment would be challenging for the department and for the taxpayer. Excluding medical days spent in the state would lead to a very personally intrusive questions during examination process that would make auditing this criteria very difficult without infringing upon privacy issues. In addition, medical care is a type of care that is usually done in person. Typically, we found that doctors, dentists, and medical treatment are a good indicator of where your home is. Under Representative Hertas's bill, any taxpayer can file an affidavit to exempt oneself from residency and from taxation, and this would be something that cannot be audited. As drafted, anyone can file this affidavit, and there is no requirement to meet any standards of residency. As written, any person can relinquish residency for tax purposes regardless of intent to change domicile or actual changes in life. Representative McDonald's bill increases the required time period that an individual must be present in Minnesota to be deemed a resident for income tax purposes from 183 to 200 days. The 183 test was put into place to ensure residents who are physically present in the state for most of the year must pay their fair share in taxes. Many times we think of residency as an impact that impacts a small class of mobile people. Yet residency impacts all Minnesotans. If you are paying your income taxes, but your neighbor who is present for most of the year in Minnesota doesn't have to pay taxes to Minnesota, it brings up an issue of fairness. As it relates to your bill, Mr. Chair, first we want to thank the advocates for agreeing to some common sense changes to your bill that we hope can be included in the omnibus bill, including having the determination of domicile apply to all domicile determinations and not just if you are domiciled in Minnesota, and ensuring that the effective date starts at the beginning of a tax year. Two positive changes, Mr. Chair. No, Mr. Chair, but these are changes that we hope to work with you, Mr. Chair, on as it moves towards the omnibus tax.
Oh, I'm certainly looking forward to that. Also, isn't there like a definition of professional, like insurance agency, attorney type thing?
Mr. Chair, as we've been in discussion with many of the advocates, that is something that we have addressed. We wanted to make sure that there's a clear definition for both the taxpayer and for the department as it relates to what is a financial service professional.
And I look forward to working with the department as we move forward. So please continue, sir.
Thank you. We would like to continue to work in partnership with the interest groups and you, Mr. Chair, to ensure the definition of financial institution and financial advisors are appropriate and well-defined, something we just talked about. Mr. Chair, we would also like to ensure that by excluding their physical presence, we are not excluding physical transaction or declarations made when conducting business. Meaning here, we want to know what you declare when applying for insurance. The insurance is on a primary residence homestead in Minnesota, etc. Mr. Chair, if these factors are excluded from consideration, taxpayers will not be able to use them both ways when making the claim to be a Minnesota resident or a resident of another state. We understand the issues surrounding the claims made by professionals in other states that take one or more of Minnesota's Supreme Court cases out of context. Those cases do not rely on only one factor. The department nonetheless wants to ensure that this unfair marketing can be combated, and a revenue notice will help provide written documentation of Minnesota's requirements. We think that this is an appropriate solution to the issues raised. We understand that, however, that some, including members of this committee, are interested in additional steps, and we hope to continue the conversation with you, Mr. Chair. So with that, Mr. Chair, we appreciate the opportunity to be a resource today and look forward to continuing the conversation on these bills and other important bills impacting Minnesotans.
Thank you, Mr. Cummings. If there's a lawsuit, are they going to go, is the court going to go more on past case law, or are they going to go on more on your revenue notice when they make their decision?
Mr. Chair, as it relates to a court case, we think that if there is a revenue notice that is in the that is for the benefit of the taxpayer, that we think that the tax court would honor that revenue notice. You know, we understand the points that have been made by some of the various interest groups, but we do think that the courts would take a revenue notice that is friendly to taxpayers and consider that.
Okay, thank you. Questions from members? Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Cummings, I think earlier you talked about the notice in which you, the department had made a determination that it would not be using certain professionals and so forth. Could you go over that list again, because it went pretty fast and I want to make sure I heard them all.
Mr. Cummings.
At the time in which we wrote the report, we what we stated in our report was that the mere physical location of a CPA or attorney providing services is not a factor in determining residency, and that the department will not look at the location of bank accounts when determining residency or where your financial institution is.
Okay.
Representative Petersburg.
Thank you. And was there any discussion about whether or not they gave church money or not? I like getting money for our church. So is that also an indicator yet that you still will be looking at as far as residency?
Mr. Cummings?
Mr. Chair, under current statute, we are not allowed to look at charitable contributions. You know, the taxpayer is not able to use that.
Representative Petersburg? Other questions from members? Representative Loeffler?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I noticed that all the fiscal notes are kind of like undetermined because we just don't know how many of these people there are and that sort of thing. And I'm wondering if you might be able to look into that further with the state demographer's office or some of the change of address things that, you know, get processed by the Secretary of State's office and some other places, because I think that there actually are some ways to get a handle, at least to some degree, on this. I think it's, we should need to know if this is a big cut for a few people or if it's a, you know, how prevalent it is. And I suspect there's some creative ways that we might be able to do that. I know there was a huge effort to try and make sure that snowbirds declared Minnesota their residence during the census.
Mr. Cummings?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I, you know, I'm not going to speak for Paul Wilson, but I know, but here we go. you know, a lot of times when we deal with the revenue estimates that deal with rate changes or things that might impact a tax base, you know, those can, we can begin to make assumptions about them. A lot of the revenue estimates that are dealt with in this area are trying to make assumptions about behavior. And I know that that is something that Dr. Wilson, you know, does very cautiously, and he also, you know, wants to make sure that there's enough information. So I think we'll try and take your advice. I will give that back just to make sure that as the omnibus tax bills are brought together into one document, that we can look at the best information possible on that.
Thanks.
Representative Loeffler.
Thanks.
Other questions from members? Chair Earhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. When you left before, did you make a comment or any kind of determination on this, the idea of board members telecommuting and how they were being charged from as being in the state, as I understood the testimony, even though they were doing that by I don't know if you said anything about that, but I was curious if you had any thoughts on that, or is that proper? And we're trying to get
Mr. Cummings. That would be comments on House File 2179, I believe.
Mr. Chair, Assistant Commissioner Steenblok is here, and it sounds like she knows the answer to this question.
Okay, please state your name to her representative for the record, please.
Mr. Chair, members, my name is Terry Steenblok, and I'm the Assistant Commissioner of Individual Taxes at the Department of Revenue. And in reference to the sourcing piece, Mr. Cummings did indicate that Minnesota Statute 290.191 is what we use to identify that. And that is, first of all, sourced where the service is received. If we can't determine that piece, then it would be sourced where the corporation has a fixed place of doing business. And then finally, if that's not determinable, it would be sourced to the ordering office. And that's outlined in the statute.
Mr. Chairman, it has nothing to do with physical presence in the state. It's only through the airwaves, and we're also nailing them for that.
Right. It's looking at those three things. So the services, where it's received, where it's sourced, or the location of the corporation.
Chair Earhart.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Okay, if there's no... Chair Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For Mr. Cummings, so in regard to domicile or resident, does one's homestead property tax, whether it's non-seasonal or homesteaded, does that have any interplay in the domicile residency? Or maybe I missed that.
Well, Mr. Chair, as it relates to, I think we're really focusing on the domicile part and not the day count. But that is one, element in terms of something that's looked at to try and see if it's is this your homestead? Is this a place in which you have your home?
Chair Erickson. Other questions for members for Mr. Cummings? Any other comments for Mr. Cummings? Okay. I will move House File 837, be later for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. Mr. Cummings, thank you for your work on these bills. Great job as usual. Okay, with that, members, thank you for your work today. Meeting tomorrow at noon, and I think room 10, I believe it is. With that, don't stop believing. Good government all the time. We are adjourned. Yeah, that was